Chapter 94. Mr. Spenlow smiled as I became modestly warm on the subject, and then argued this question with me as he had argued the other. He said, what was it after all? It was a question of feeling. If the public felt that their wills were in safe keeping, and took it for granted that the office was not to be made better, who was the worse for it? Nobody. Who was the better for it? All the sinecurists. Very well. Then the good predominated. It might not be a perfect system, nothing was perfect, but what he objected to was the insertion of the wedge. Under the prerogative office, the country had been glorious. Insert the wedge into the prerogative office, and the country would cease to be glorious. He considered it the principle of a gentleman to take things as he found them, and he had no doubt the prerogative office would last our time. I deferred to his opinion, though I had great doubts of it myself. I find he was right, however, for it has not only lasted to the present moment, but has done so in the teeth of a great parliamentary report made, not too willingly, 18 years ago, when all these objections of mine were set forth in detail, and when the existing stowage for wills was described as equal to the accumulation of only 2 years and a half more. What they have done with them since, whether they have lost many, or whether they sell any, now and then, to the butter shops, I don't know. I am glad mine is not there, and I hope it may not go there, yet a while. I have set all this down, in my present blissful chapter, because here it comes into its natural place. Mr. Spenlow and I falling into this conversation, prolonged it and our saunter to and fro, until we diverged into general topics. And so it came about, in the end, that Mr. Spenlow told me this day week was Dora's birthday, and he would be glad if I would come down and join a little picnic on the occasion. I went out of my senses immediately, became a mere driveler next day, on receipt of a little lace-edged sheet of notepaper, favored by Papa, to remind, and passed the intervening period in a state of dotage. I think I committed every possible absurdity in the way of preparation for this blessed event. I turn hot when I remember the cravat I bought. My boots might be placed in any collection of instruments of torture. I provided, and sent down by the Norwood coach the night before, a delicate little hamper, amounting in itself, I thought, almost to a declaration. There were crackers in it with the tenderest mottoes that could be got for money. At 6 in the morning, I was in Covent Garden Market, buying a bouquet for Dora. At 10 I was on horseback. I hired a gallant grey, for the occasion, with the bouquet in my hat, to keep it fresh, trotting down to Norwood. I suppose that when I saw Dora in the garden, and pretended not to see her, and rode past the house pretending to be anxiously looking for it, I committed 2 small fooleries which other young gentlemen in my circumstances might have committed, because they came so very natural to me. But oh, when I did find the house, and did dismount at the garden gate, and drag those stony-hearted boots across the lawn to Dora sitting on a garden seat under a lilac tree, what a spectacle she was, upon that beautiful morning, among the butterflies, in a white chiffon and a dress of celestial blue. There was a young lady with her comparatively stricken in years almost 20, I should say. Her name was Miss Mills, and Dora called her Julia. She was the bosom friend of Dora. Happy Miss Mills! Jip was there, and Jip would bark at me again. When I presented my bouquet, he gnashed his teeth with jealousy. Well he might. If he had the least idea how I adored his mistress, well he might. Oh, thank you, Mr. Copperfield. What dear flowers! Apostrophe said Dora. I had had an intention of saying, and had been studying the best form of words for 3 miles, that I thought them beautiful, before I saw them so near her. But I couldn't manage it. She was too bewildering. To see her lay the flowers against her little dimpled chin, was to lose all presence of mind and power of language in a feeble ecstasy. I wonder I didn't say, kill me, if you have a heart, Miss Mills. Let me die here. apostrophe, then Dora held my flowers to Jip to smell. Then Jip growled, and wouldn't smell them. Then Dora laughed, and held them a little closer to Jip, to make him. Then Jip laid hold of a bit of geranium with his teeth, and worried imaginary cats in it. Then Dora beat him, and pouted, and said, "My poor beautiful flowers." Apostrophe apostrophe as compassionately, I thought, as if Jip had laid hold of me. I wished he had. "You'll be so glad to hear, Mr. Copperfield," apostrophe said Dora, that cross Miss Murdstone is not here. She has gone to her brother's marriage, and will be away at least 3 weeks. Isn't that delightful?" Apostrophe apostrophe, I said I was sure it must be delightful to her, and all that was delightful to her was delightful to me. Miss Mills, with an air of superior wisdom and benevolence, smiled upon us. "She is the most disagreeable thing I ever saw," apostrophe said Dora. "You can't believe how ill-tempered and shocking she is, Julia." Apostrophe, "Yes, I can, my dear," apostrophe apostrophe said Julia. "You can, perhaps, love," apostrophe returned Dora, with her hand on Julia's. "Forgive my not accepting you, my dear, at first." Apostrophe, I learned, from this, that Miss Mills had had her trials in the course of a checkered existence, and that to these, perhaps, I might refer that wise benignity of manner which I had already noticed. I found, in the course of the day, that this was the case. Miss Mills having been unhappy in a misplaced affection, and being understood to have retired from the world on her awful stock of experience, but still to take a calm interest in the unblighted hopes and loves of youth. But now Mr. Spenlow came out of the house, and Dora went to him, saying, "Look, Papa, what beautiful flowers!" Apostrophe apostrophe and Miss Mills smiled thoughtfully, as who should say, "Ye mayflies, enjoy your brief existence in the bright morning of life." Apostrophe apostrophe and we all walked from the lawn towards the carriage, which was getting ready. I shall never have such a ride again. I have never had such another. There were only those three, their hamper, my hamper, and the guitar case, in the phaeton, and, of course, the phaeton was open. And I rode behind it, and Dora sat with her back to the horses, looking towards me. She kept the bouquet close to her on the cushion, and wouldn't allow Jip to sit on that side of her at all, for fear he should crush it. She often carried it in her hand, often refreshed herself with its fragrance. Our eyes at those times often met, and my great astonishment is that I didn't go over the head of my gallant gray into the carriage. There was dust, I believe. There was a good deal of dust, I believe. I have a faint impression that Mr. Spenlow remonstrated with me for riding in it, but I knew of none. I was sensible of a mist of love and beauty about Dora, but of nothing else. He stood up sometimes, and asked me what I thought of the prospect. I said it was delightful, and I dare say it was, but it was all Dora to me. The sun shone Dora, and the birds sang Dora. The south wind blew Dora, and the wild flowers in the hedges were all Dora's, to a bud. My comfort is, Miss Mills understood me. Miss Mills alone could enter into my feelings thoroughly. I don't know how long we were going, and to this hour I know as little where we went. Perhaps it was near Guildford. Perhaps some Arabian night magician opened up the place for the day, and shut it up forever when we came away. It was a green spot, on a hill, carpeted with soft turf. There were shady trees, and heather, and, as far as the eye could see, a rich landscape. It was a trying thing to find people here, waiting for us, and my jealousy, even of the ladies, knew no bounds. But all of my own sex, especially one impostor, 3 or 4 years my elder, with a red whisker, on which he established an amount of presumption, not to be endured, were my mortal foes. We all unpacked our baskets, and employed ourselves in getting dinner ready. Red Whisker pretended he could make a salad, which I don't believe, and obtruded himself on public notice. Some of the young ladies washed the lettuces for him, and sliced them under his directions. Dora was among these. I felt that fate had pitted me against this man, and one of us must fall. Red Whisker made a salad. I wondered how they could eat it. Nothing should have induced me to touch it. And voted himself into the charge of the wine cellar, which he constructed, being an ingenious beast, in the hollow trunk of a tree. By and by, I saw him, with the majority of a lobster on his plate, eating his dinner at the feet of Dora. I have but an indistinct idea of what happened for some time after this baleful object presented itself to my view. I was very merry, I know, but it was hollow merriment. I attached myself to a young creature in pink, with little eyes, and flirted with her desperately. She received my attentions with favor, but whether on my account solely, or because she had any designs on Red Whisker, I can't say. Dora's health was drunk. When I drank it, I affected to interrupt my conversation for that purpose, and to resume it immediately afterwards. I caught Dora's eye as I bowed to her, and I thought it looked appealing. But it looked at me over the head of Red Whisker, and I was adamant. The young creature in pink had a mother in green, and I rather think the latter separated us from motives of policy. Hobbit, there was a general breaking up of the party, while the remnants of the dinner were being put away, and I strolled off by myself among the trees, in a raging and remorseful state. I was debating whether I should pretend that I was not well, and fly I don't know where upon my gallant grey, when Dora and Miss Mills met me. Apostrophe Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe said Miss Mills, you are dull. Apostrophe, I begged her pardon. Not at all. And Dora, apostrophe said Miss Mills, you are dull. Apostrophe, oh dear no. Not in the least. Apostrophe Mr. Copperfield and Dora, apostrophe said Miss Mills, with an almost venerable air. Enough of this. Do not allow a trivial misunderstanding to wither the blossoms of spring, which, once put forth and blighted, cannot be renewed. I speak, apostrophe said Miss Mills, from experience of the past, the remote, irrevocable past. The gushing fountains which sparkle in the sun must not be stopped in mere caprice. The oasis in the desert of Sahara must not be plucked up idly. Apostrophe, I hardly knew what I did. I was burning all over to that extraordinary extent. But I took Dora's little hand and kissed it and she let me. I kissed Miss Mills' hand. And we all seemed, to my thinking, to go straight up to the seventh heaven. We did not come down again. We stayed up there all the evening. At first we strayed to and fro among the trees. I with Dora's shy arm drawn through mine. And heaven knows, folly as it all was, it would have been a happy fate, to have been struck immortal with those foolish feelings, and have stayed among the trees forever. But, much too soon, we heard the others laughing and talking, and calling where's Dora? Apostrophe apostrophe so we went back, and they wanted Dora to sing. Red Whisker would have got the guitar case out of the carriage, but Dora told him nobody knew where it was, but one. So Red Whisker was done for in a moment, and I got it, and I unlocked it, and I took the guitar out, and I sat by her, and I held her handkerchief and gloves, and I drank in every note of her dear voice, and she sang to me who loved her, and all the others might applaud as much as they liked, but they had nothing to do with it. I was intoxicated with joy. I was afraid it was too happy to be real, and that I should wake in Buckingham Street presently, and hear Mrs. Krupp clinking the teacups in getting breakfast ready. But Dora sang, and others sang, and Miss Mills sang about the slumbering echoes in the caverns of memory, as if she were 100 years old, and the evening came on, and we had tea, with the kettle boiling gypsy fashion, and I was still as happy as ever. I was happier than ever when the party broke up, and the other people, defeated Red Whisker and all, went their several ways, and we went ours through the still evening and the dying light, with sweet scents rising up around us. Mr. Spenlow being a little drowsy after the champagne honor to the soil that grew the grape that made the wine, to the sun that ripened it, and to the merchant who adulterated it. and being fast asleep in the corner of the carriage, I rode by the side and talked to Dora. She admired my horse, and patted him, oh, what a dear little hand it looked upon a horse. And her shawl would not keep right, and now and then I drew it round her with my arm, and I even fancied that Jip began to see how it was, and to understand that he must make up his mind to be friends with me. That sagacious Miss Mills too, that amiable, though quite used up, recluse, that little patriarch of something less than 20, who had done with the world, and mustn't on any account have the slumbering echoes in the caverns of memory awakened. What a kind thing she did. Apostrophe Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe said Miss Mills, come to this side of the carriage a moment, if you can spare a moment. I want to speak to you. Apostrophe, behold me, on my gallant gray, bending at the side of Miss Mills, with my hand upon the carriage door. Dora is coming to stay with me. She is coming home with me the day after tomorrow. If you would like to call, I am sure Papa would be happy to see you. Apostrophe, what could I do, but invoke a silent blessing on Miss Mills' head, and store Miss Mills' address in the securest corner of my memory? What could I do, but tell Miss Mills, with grateful looks and fervent words, how much I appreciated her good offices, and what an inestimable value I set upon her friendship? Then Miss Mills benignantly dismissed me, saying, go back to Dora. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and I went, and Dora leaned out of the carriage to talk to me, and we talked all the rest of the way. And I rode my gallant gray so close to the wheel, that I grazed his near foreleg against it, and took the bark off, as his owner told me, to the tune of 3 pence, which I paid, and thought extremely cheap for so much joy. What time Miss Mills sat looking at the moon, murmuring verses and recalling, I suppose, the ancient days when she and Earth had anything in common. Norwood was many miles too near, and we reached it many hours too soon. But Mr. Spenlow came to himself a little short of it, and said, you must come in, Copperfield, and rest. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and I consenting, we had sandwiches and wine and water. In the light room, Dora blushing looked so lovely, that I could not tear myself away, but sat there staring, in a dream, until the snoring of Mr. Spenlow inspired me with sufficient consciousness to take my leave. So we parted. I riding all the way to London with the farewell touch of Dora's hand still light on mine, recalling every incident and word 10,000 times, lying down in my own bed at last, as enraptured a young noodle as ever was carried out of his 5 wits by love. When I awoke next morning, I was resolute to declare my passion to Dora, and know my fate. Happiness or misery was now the question. There was no other question, that I knew of in the world, and only Dora could give the answer to it. I passed 3 days in a luxury of wretchedness, torturing myself by putting every conceivable variety of discouraging construction on all that ever had taken place between Dora and me. At last, arrayed for the purpose at a vast expense, I went to Miss Mills, fraught with a declaration. How many times I went up and down the street, and round the square painfully aware of being a much better answer to the old riddle than the original one, before I could persuade myself to go up the steps and knock, is no matter now. Even when, at last, I had knocked, and was waiting at the door, I had some flurried thought. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.